VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
We do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on VCY America. Last night, the U.S. Senate passed the $2 trillion coronavirus stimulus package. The bill was constantly changing through the debate process. The fluidity was unbelievable, as at some points, the most extreme liberals' wish list was incorporated into the legislation, item after item, page after page, items that had absolutely nothing to do with the issue at hand, namely that of the coronavirus. Well, lots was changed even in that final day of negotiations, and within recent hours, media now has been peeling back the layers of the onion, revealing what was included. The Senate passed it unanimously last night. Meanwhile, the legislation moves over to the House, where a vote is anticipated tomorrow. Nancy Pelosi talking about a voice vote. That's just one of the issues that's happening at this time. We're going to take a look at another yet. According to our guest today, governors and mayors have been issuing broad executive orders that are not well vetted and assuming broad powers to shut down businesses with little notice, ordering people to stay home and imposing fines on violators. Most of the orders operate as if there are no constitutional protections whatsoever. Well, discussing the topic today of losing liberty is the long-term crisis, we welcome back to Crosstalk constitutional attorney Matt Stever, a founder and chairman of Liberty Council. Matt, good to have you with us.
Good to be with you, Jim. Thank you.
Let's first discuss this legislation that passed last night, the so-called stimulus bill. Somewhere that's reporting now about 880 pages. Previous forms of this thing were approaching 1,100 to 1,400 pages. I'd like you to comment on the battle that ensued on this legislation, as well as what do we know as what became part of the final legislation.
Well, let's look at, first of all, how much it is. It started off as a $1 trillion bill, and now it is passed through the Senate at $2.2 trillion. Just to get your mind wrapped around how much that is, this is staggering. If the U.S. Treasury printed a dollar per second nonstop, it would take 63,420 years to print $2 trillion. That would equate to 634 lifetimes of 100 years each. But here's a better analogy. The United States of America has been in existence for 234 years. If the founders began printing the money from the very beginning, and the presses continued to run from the very beginning, it would take 275 more 234-year spans of time to complete the job. In other words, since America's founding, if the printers began running 234 years, it would take 275 of those stacked one after another to actually continually print to be $2 trillion. That is the staggering sum that this bill passes. Now, that's a whole different conversation that we need to have, because the question is, how can we even afford it? But the battle that ensued to get it to this part is, in fact, one that started with Nancy Pelosi. Pelosi scrapped the Senate bill, and then she created her own bill. And in that bill, she had her pet projects, which include permanent funding of Planned Parenthood, funding research on aborted baby body parts, which would incentivize aborting babies, some of whom we know have been aborted alive, to harvest intact body parts and organs. She also had in there elements of the Green New Deal that was being pushed by Senator Bernie Sanders, even Joe Biden, and AOC. That was in there for funding. She had carbon emissions in there that would ultimately result in airlines becoming more expensive. She had an LGBT agenda in there that would require any employer that needed to have a loan, they would be required to, quote, diversify their board, which means that they would have to put a person of LGBT on their board.
Oh, my.
And then in addition to the airlines, not only they would have to put LGBT, and even small companies would have to put somebody LGBT on the board, the airlines had an additional requirement, and that would be to put on their board, and this is permanent, for example. You're going to take money, You put an elderly person on the board across the board for all the employers. But for airlines, you're going to also have to put another person who is a union representative. So that was all in the bill, plus a lot more. There was hundreds of millions of dollars for things such as funding a theater for the John F. Kennedy Theater of Performing Arts, funding PBS, funding to historically black colleges in the District of Columbia, and many other things. The good news is this. The Senate, through a lot of work, we were working day and night, they rejected all of Pelosi's pet projects. They did pass their own bill. However, here's two problems. One, now this bill goes over to Nancy Pelosi. You can bet she's not going to be happy that it doesn't have those pet projects in it. So that vote is expected to be tomorrow. We're urging people to contact members on the House so that she doesn't hijack the bill and reinsert that information back in. If that's the case, that bill will have to be like a tennis match going back over to the Senate and will never get anywhere. The second thing is this. Some senators, including Lindsey Graham and others, discovered a very problematic provision in the Senate bill that actually did pass, and they raised the red flag. They urged the Senate, including Ben Sasse and other senators, to take that provision out. In the drafting of that bill, Senator Lindsey Graham calls it a, quote, life-threatening, close quote, provision. What does it do? It incentivizes layoffs. It will add to people who collect unemployment $600 over and above what they would otherwise be entitled to, which means in most cases people could get unemployment benefits for up to 39 weeks at a rate higher than what they were making on the job.
Oh my.
Consequently, that means instead of helping people who have been laid off, it will incentivize people to be laid off and incentivize companies to lay off their employees so that they can actually get a higher salary doing nothing for nearly 40 weeks or so than if they were working. That will decimate further the job market. It's not going to put people back to work. It will actually, it'll exacerbate the unemployment lines and the and the non-employment of people who are critical for the running of various companies and industry.
Matt Stever with us here today, and as you mentioned, the bill that did pass last night as well, and I it just pulled this down from Fox News a bit ago, that there is still $25 million in this for funding the John F. Kennedy Center.
That's right.
But that's down from the $35 million that was included in the House version. The Senate bill provides $75 million to the National Endowment for the Arts and National Endowment for Humanities. That's down from the $300 million that was in the House stimulus bill. But, Matt, there's other things too, and it is just maddening that in a time of crisis when they're trying to do something there, and I should point out that an economist under Ronald Reagan said the stimulus is going to make things worse than better, that they're putting in all these pet projects where, again, the American people are not what are being looked at through this legislation. It's what is politically popular. How can I advance my leftist agenda?
Well, that's right. In fact, Joe Biden is insisting now, along with Bernie Sanders and AOC, that the Green New Deal be part of this bill. And we know that James Clyburn, House Democrat, said just a few days ago that this is a tremendous opportunity for the Democrats to actually implement their vision of the future. And that's what they're trying to do. And unfortunately, some of that is still in this bill. The poison pill, or the problem, the life-threatening condition that, as Senator Graham talks about, mm-hmm. is that will incentivize layoffs. There's also $350 million in this bill for refugee programs that have nothing to do with the coronavirus or putting people back to work.
Matt, and we also need to point out the House, as you said, planned to vote on this tomorrow. But we know that there is yet a third coronavirus bill that's being worked on as well. So there's going to be another thing that's going to follow even after this one.
Yeah, there's another bill that's coming right down the pipe as well. So it just seems to be nonstop coming out of Congress. And here's, you know, the problem. when you have an emergency or any kind of crises, you have these problems. You have people that do not care about addressing the emergency. You got people like Rahm Emanuel, the advisor mm-hmm. of Barack Obama, who said, never let a crisis go to waste. And that's what some of these people have as a mentality. They see a crisis, and instead of having compassion for people, rolling up their sleeves, tried to address both the virus and people who are out of jobs, they say, oh, they start to salivate. Now is the time that we can put our information, our bill, our vision in, and people won't be able to stop it, because what would happen is a bill like this gets to the president's desk.
It's must pass.
It's must pass, because mm-hmm. if you don't pass it, then what's going to happen? He'll be blamed for not having any care, mm-hmm. and then it just goes back and forth, and the Democrats
yep.
continue to delay this as well. In the meantime, people are suffering and hurting. So here's what we need to do. On the House side, we make sure that Pelosi doesn't put any more of these pet projects in it, and that bill is going to be voted on tomorrow. On the overall bill, there are some things that they need to go back. You know, assuming that they pass it, and it's signed, they need to go back and they need to pull some of this unnecessary stuff out. That's what has to happen. You know, and especially the provision, as much as we dislike all the other provisions that you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
the other provision, the one that Graham calls life-threatening, that's going to exacerbate the problem. That's
yes.
going to cause more layoffs, and it's not going to help. It's going to hurt more than it will help.
And folks, the phone number to your House members is 202-225-3121, 202-225-3121. Matt, I'd like to introduce our next topic, and we'll be having a break here in just a couple minutes. But yesterday afternoon, Liberty Counsel touched on a very critical issue through a press release entitled Losing Liberty is the Long-Term Crisis. Every newscast on the coronavirus is focusing on it. We learn about how many new cases, how many deaths, etc. But you're raising the alarm about the lost liberty issue. Tell us what is prompting your concern. Tell us what's happening.
Well, first of all, you just look at what's happening, obviously, in Congress. You get a good taste of what's happening there in the midst of this crisis. They try to put in all kinds of things that they otherwise couldn't get passed. On the other hand, if we look at what mayors and governors are doing across the country, we're tracking all these different executive orders. They're acting as though the Constitution doesn't apply. They're giving a few hours' notice to drastically change your way of life, drastically change whether or not your business should be open or shut. And I'll give you some examples as we go through this, because some of these are shocking. And in L.A. County, as just an example, they did a safer-at-home order, saying that you're safer at home. And if you are found to violate that, if you go to the place of employment or you walk outside your house and somebody considers you to be a violator, they will shut off your water. They're threatening the entire county of Los Angeles is threatening to shut off your water and your electricity. And they are dispatching what they call ambassadors to monitor compliance with this, going through neighborhoods to make sure people are in compliance. I mean, that's just some of the drastic things. In California, some jurisdictions are considering using Chinese-made drones with night vision to track people's movements. And there's already discussion, and it's already happening around the world, even in other democratic countries, tracking people through cell phones. We'll talk more about that.
Folks, you're listening to Crosstalk here on VCY America. Yeah, you're right. You heard him. Tracking people with their cell phones. That's going on in other countries, but that's being proposed for here, too. And in addition to that, yeah, following people, monitoring by drones what's going on. Are they complying? Back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Is with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how old are the glaciers of Greenland?
You know, Chris, the glaciers of Greenland are many thousands of feet thick, leading many to conclude that it would take long periods of time for the snow to build up. Well, here's something to think about. Two American planes from World War II had to be abandoned on a Greenland glacier. Some 50 years later, a group went back to try and find and restore those now rare aircraft. It turned out they were buried beneath 250 feet of solid ice. Obviously, it doesn't take many thousands of years to build up that huge thickness. The expeditioners retrieved one of those planes and have now restored it, and it can be seen at air shows around the country. Chris, when we see this plane fly, we can enjoy the fact that this is just another evidence that the Back to Genesis truth of creation is accurate.
For more on creation, visit our website at www.icr.org.
Constitutional attorney Matt Staver with us today on Crosstalk. Yes, losing liberty is the long-term crisis. That's our topic today. And folks, as he's talked about, yes, threatening in Los Angeles County to turn off water and power. You have a non-essential service and you're operating or something there yet? We're going to turn off your water. We're going to turn off your power. We've got monitors going through neighborhoods to make sure you're complying. Some jurisdictions using these Chinese-made drones. And we understand that some of these are equipped with speaker systems on them, Matt, so people, right, they can actually, the police departments can give direction to the people that they're surveying.
Yeah, night vision, so yes, that they can monitor people at night. They could actually even look at your temperature in terms of whether you're elevated or not. You know, the MIT Technology Review just published an article recently, and it's actually seeming to be in favor of it, and it describes a scenario that, in fact, is actually happening. And it says, you know, we don't know what the future is going to be like, but you can imagine this kind of a world in which you get on a flight, perhaps you'll have to sign up for a service that tracks your movements via your cell phone. The airline would be able to see where you've gone, and it would be able to see, have you contracted a virus, this or some other virus, because we're going to have many viruses in the future. How long ago was it? Where did you travel? Did you travel to a location that was considered a hot spot? Have you been in relationship, proximity to a person who has been tested positive for the virus, and whether or not you had a vaccine? And if there was any alarm, the alarm would go off as you're getting on the airplane, as you're coming into any public venue, and you would be prohibited from boarding. And the article ends by saying this: we'll adapt to and accept such measures, much as we've adapted to increasingly stringent airport security screenings in the wake of terrorist attacks. The intrusive surveillance will be considered a small price to pay for the basic freedom to be with other people. That's how that article concludes. There's a lot of information in between. Well, you think, well, that's a futuristic article. No, it's not. That's exactly what China is doing now. And it's not just China. China requires the people to have an app on their cell phones. They track them. And the app has a green, a yellow, and a red light. And so when you go into different public venues, you have to show that app. And if it's yellow or red, you're not going to get in. And if it's green, you are allowed to be in.
Wow.
So it tracks individuals where they are, tracks where they've been. And in fact, that's also happening in South Korea. It's happening in Lombardy, Italy, where there's been some outbreak of the coronavirus, and they're tracking through geolocation all the different people. And even Israel. Israel just passed a provision setting aside a previous law that was only allowed to be used in case of tracking terrorists via their cell phone technology. They've now set that aside, and they're tracking individuals in this particular area. They're tracking people who, for example, have tested positive, have gone to different places or in certain locations. They're testing. They're tracking them to make sure that they are complying with quarantine or stay-at-home orders. And, in fact, there is a video online now of a person, a man in Tel Aviv, city in Israel. It looks like it came out of China. This man apparently was detected that he went outside by this geolocation cell phone technology, and he was wrestled to the ground by three police officers in hazmat suits and arrested for going outside during a stay-at-home order. He was supposed to apparently be in quarantine. That looks like it's coming out of China, but that's in the democratic nation of Israel, the only democratic area in all of the Middle East. And then we have in the United States, cell phone technology, social media, Facebook, and others, they're getting together now as I'm speaking, and they're wanting to implement this in the United States.
No.
Not just for this coronavirus, but continually going forward,
yeah,
under the idea that we need to have this for our own safety so that we can limit viruses in the future. And people who have a, quote, disease or have been close to some virus, they won't have access, and they will, what they call in this article, lawfully discriminate against you in order to protect the rest of the population so that they can socialize together. I mean, this is absolutely stunning, but it is happening at a rapid speed.
Yeah, and that's the point there, is that the speed this is happening, I mean, it's jaw-dropping to see how fast things have transpired in such a short period of time, but this is what will take place immediately the next time something, another virus breaks or some other so-called national emergency takes place. All of these things will become instantaneous, and then they'll take us down another road for even more surveillance type things.
Well, and you think, well, how did these things happen so fast? It's not like these things just popped out of nowhere. These things have been in the planning for some time. You know, the whole thing of Rahm Emanuel, never let a crisis go to waste. There are people who have been planning for these kinds of crises and looking at these kinds of abilities to track individuals in the context of an epidemic or a pandemic in order to control your movements and your freedom. So this has been in the works, and now people are trying to implement it. On the other hand, the situation with the governors and the mayors, they've always had these state or local emergency powers. They've usually been exercised, of course, in the context of a natural disaster, earthquakes, floods, fires, hurricanes, tornadoes, etc. And those have been very temporary and focused on certain things. But the fact of the matter is, the way that they're drafted, they give this what appears to be unlimited power without considering the constitutional provisions. And so as one governor begins to do one thing, then a local mayor or some other local official and another governor, another state, begins to do similar things. And what they do is, let me just give you an example of the arbitrariness of this. Just this past Tuesday, I was driving home. It was after 5 o'clock in my car. The mayor of Orange County, Florida, has over 1.3 million residents in that county alone. Our office is in the edge of Orange County. Had a press conference at 5 o'clock. Then it was broadcast on the local radios. He did not have the executive order signed yet. He decided to issue the executive order on the same day that President Trump said, we want to get America back to work by Easter. Well, this particular mayor, Dennings, is married to his wife, who is a member of Congress, and she was on the Trump impeachment team. I don't know if it was a coincidence, but it was the same day he wanted to get America back to work. So he does this press conference, and the word comes out of the press conference, he's shutting down all of Orange County. Well, for the next hour and 42 minutes, we didn't know whether that included us or not. And so you go to their Orange County website, you don't have a clue because they don't post it there. Finally, they posted it, and there's a lot of exemptions, and we meet a number of those exemptions, so we won't have to shut down tonight, because it goes into effect at 11 p.m. tonight. But for an hour and a half, at least, we and for other people, many other hours who didn't get that information, they were concerned, worried, does it affect me? How does it affect me?
Yes.
But that, Jim, should never happen. That's the problem. They're printing these things off willy-nilly, like in Virginia. They're shutting down churches, but on the other hand, Governor Northam says, essential businesses are liquor stores,
yes,
and abortion clinics.
Yeah, and I'd like to talk about the statewide shutdowns, and they're happening all over. We're seeing them right now in our state, and ironically, you know, they divide everybody up into essential and non-essential.
Right.
And what's happening is that for many states, the killing of babies at abortion centers is deemed essential. And I just saw it here. A video was released in Milwaukee whereby abortion centers are deemed essential, and so there were some people with a group called Terry 1 Hour standing outside with some signs. I don't know, it looked like a few, maybe 5-6 people, and holding signs outside the abortion clinic, and the enclave of police that came to tell them that they had to leave because of the governor's orders to, you know, your best stay at home, and saying you have to leave out here. So you can kill babies on the inside, but you can't have a voice on the outside saying what's going on inside is wrong.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. He said, Governor Northam said, elective surgeries are banned now. He just issued that order, but abortion is essential, so you can continue to kill children. In fact, there's a report that just came out that a boy's kidney operation was postponed, but you can go out and kill your children. You can go out and kill little innocent children under this executive order, but this little boy couldn't get his kidney operation done yet because it wasn't life-threatening. I mean, that's just the absurdity of this. In one state, for example, the state has a stay-at-home order. And what happens in that case is it's not even just limiting churches to 10 or more people, which is absolutely absurd,
right,
by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I think it's unconstitutional. But now they're threatening churches that are doing live simulcast or Facebook Live, for example, on Sunday. They're threatening them. How? Because they say, well, you can't even travel to your church.
Oh, my.
So the pastor, the tech person, and the sound person can't travel to the church to even do the Facebook Live or the other video streaming of the Sunday morning services. So they're literally trying to even shut down the streaming under the idea that you can't even travel to do that, even though you're under the 10 limitations. I mean, Jim, it is becoming unbelievable in terms of the breadth of liberty that we're losing. And that's one of my big concerns, is that in the context, you know, losing liberty, the article that I wrote yesterday for Liberty Council, losing liberty is the long-term crisis. Mm-hmm. We're seeing it in the short term, but we're setting the precedent for some real serious problems down the road as well.
Matt Staver with us today. Yes, even liquor stores are deemed essential businesses. Unbelievable. Matt, you have also put, you're in the process of putting together an article about knowing your rights in the state of emergency. What's important for us to know?
Yeah, we actually do have that two-page article ready, so we can provide that to anyone. We've got it on our website, lc.org, but we have questions in there about can these emergency orders limit the size of churches, and can they force you to get a vaccine? Can they force you to be tested? Can they do these orders without any notice? You know, we start with the presumption, Jim, that we do have liberty. We have certain unalienable rights that predate the Constitution, and we have those rights protected in the Constitution along with other liberties. The Constitution does not get set aside even at a time of a state of emergency like this. You still have constitutional protections. It's only been tested in times of war at the Supreme Court. We've never had something quite like this, this extensive, with regards to a virus, something outside of war or insurrection. So what we're seeing right now is new ground that's never been tested. But what we do know is that there are certain constitutional principles. They don't get suspended because there's a virus. One of those is freedom of speech and free exercise of religion. And so consequently, in the context of a church, this is an easy issue. If the churches are treated dissimilarly to other places, like Virginia as an example, you could have 10 people congregate in a liquor store, no problem. But if you have a church do that, you're banned and you will be prosecuted. You know, that kind of dissimilar treatment, or in North Carolina where they had in the early days of their executive order, it may have been amended now, you can meet in libraries but not in churches. You can't gather in a place called a church, but libraries are okay. I mean, that kind of dissimilar treatment is discriminatory and, frankly, unconstitutional. The Constitution doesn't get suspended. And here's the general thing. Whenever you're impinging on somebody's constitutional freedom, does the government have a strong interest or, in some cases, a compelling interest? Well, you know, some would certainly say this is compelling. So let's give it that for a basis. Then you look at, have they achieved their interest, stopping the spread of the virus, protecting people's health and safety, in a least restrictive means available? Can they do it any other way that doesn't impinge on your right, that still reaches their objective? We can talk about that after the break.
Matt Staver with us today here on Crosstalk on the VCY American Network. The topic today, losing liberty is the long-term crisis. Back in a minute here on VCY America.
What will the world look like in the last days? One significant clue the Bible offers is a fascinating look at the New Babylon. More than one-tenth of the book of Revelation is devoted to prophecies about this city, the center of the Antichrist world government. In the book New Babylon Rising, trusted prophecy expert Ron Rhodes offers insight into what God's Word tells us about the worldwide influence of New Babylon in the end times. You will discover the rampant paganism and evil that will mark this city, the forthcoming time of great tribulation, the coming cashless society, and you'll see how prophecies presented in the Old Testament will be fulfilled. You will discover that no matter how uncertain the future looks, you can have peace knowing that God is in full control. New Babylon Rising, available for a donation of $17 or more from VCY America. Call 1-800-729-9829.
Constitutional attorney Matt Staver with us today on Crosstalk. Our topic, losing liberty is the long-term crisis. And by the way, Matt has put together, and the team at Liberty Council has put together an official legal bulletin called Know Your Rights in a State of Emergency. And Matt, you've got this posted prominently on your website.
Yeah, we have it right there at lc.org, lc.org. You can get that two-page download right there on knowing your rights in a state of emergency. The release that I did yesterday is also on that front page, Losing Liberty is the Long-Term Crisis. I encourage people to read it. And also, we are putting up right now the ability to fax members of the House and the Senate leadership, so that Nancy Pelosi, there's two things. We don't want Nancy Pelosi to hijack this bill. Obviously, there's some issues with the bill that need to be fixed. First of all, we don't want her to hijack it and put her Planned Parenthood and Green New Deal back into the bill. And she's voting on that tomorrow. Secondly, we do need some of the provisions of the bill to be tweaked and amended so that there's not these devastating provisions that will actually do more harm than good.
And the phone number again to the House, 202-225-3121. Again, friends, that to know your rights in the national emergency, go to lc.org. You'll see the scrolling banner across the top. It's the first item on the banner. Now, I'm going to just point something else out to you. The second item on their banner, and we're not taking calls or questions on this today, but we've been receiving contacts at VCY, at Crosstalk, asking about the census. The second item they have there, census questionnaire, am I required to answer? There's an article you need to read there as well, lc.org. Again, we're not talking census today. Just want you to know that's there to have your questions answered. Now, Matt, for those who are listening, say we don't have internet at our location. Can they call Liberty Council to get a copy of this?
Yeah, they can call Liberty Council and get a copy, and that's 407-875-1776. 407-875-1776.
And they'll send you this bulletin, this legal bulletin, Know Your Rights in a State of Emergency. Just ask for it. I need the bulletin on rights in a state of emergency. They'll know what it is, so send it to you. Again, their number right now is 407-875-1776. So, Matt, I just want you to clarify something here from this last segment. You're mentioning that the churches have to be treated equally as other businesses. If grocery stores are allowed to have more than 50 people or 10 people in them, does that mean churches are allowed to do that, or are there different exemptions or exceptions there?
Well, if they're going to allow 50 people in them, that is an issue, because if they're putting, now a grocery store, you can understand why people need food. There's certain things that you need, such mm-hmm. as food and medicine. But that doesn't mean that you can't, do away with the number of people restriction. Because you can deal with certain things by having a certain people in the store at a time. I'm not saying I agree with all those restrictions on numbers. I frankly don't. I have a real problem with some of these because they're arbitrary. Like in some cases, for example, one of the stores was not allowing certain people inside because of the numbers. And so what were they doing? They were outside.
Standing in line.
All standing in line
next
right
to
beside each other.
Right.
And so that doesn't help anything.
Right. Matt, before we open lines, just any further comment about knowing your rights in a state of emergency?
Well, I think you have to know your rights in a state of emergency, and whether or not you have these stay-at-home orders or whether, you know, your business is shut down or in some cases, you know, you're just put out of business without any notice or compensation, but particularly churches, you know, what are they going to do? You know, some people say, well, we're getting by online. Really? I appreciate that idea that you're getting by online, and certainly, you know, we'll support whatever, you know, pastors want to do. But take the mother that is just got out of her job. You know, how's the church going to know about that online? There are certain things that you can do in smaller numbers or however you want to do it where you still have some fellowship, you know, that touch or that condolence of someone who just lost their job, that they're out of work for the next 2 weeks, 4 months, or four weeks or so. They don't know how they're going to pay. You need to be thinking about how you're going to be ministering to the people in the community and start thinking outside the box. And so we can talk through all those different options. How do you do that in this kind of crisis? How do you continue to maintain liberty and continue to exercise your mission while you're at the same time trying to protect people's health? There's a balance there. And sometimes I think the pendulum has swung too far.
Matt, I'd like to just quickly one other issue that prompted me here, and that is, what is the role of the federal government toward this as versus state government? Governor Cuomo, for instance, has been criticizing President Trump, complaining Tuesday that the federal government only sent 400 ventilators when they needed 30,000. I'd like you to listen to what President Trump's response was to this and then have you comment on this issue. Let's go to that clip.
I watched Governor Cuomo, and he was very nice. We're building them hospitals, we're building them medical centers, and he was complaining about we're doing probably more, definitely more than anybody else. And he mm-hmm. was talking about the ventilators, but he should have ordered the ventilators. And he had a choice, he had a chance, because right here, I just got this out, that he refused to order 15,000 ventilators. I'll show this to Bill, but take a look at that, Bill. What does that say?
The social distancing here.
This says New York Governor Cuomo rejected buying recommended 16,000 ventilators in 2015 for the pandemic, for a pandemic, established death panels and lotteries instead. So he had a chance to buy in 2015 16,000 ventilators at a very low price, and he turned it down. I'm not blaming him or anything else, but he shouldn't be talking about us. He's supposed to be buying his own ventilators. We're going to help. But, you know, if you think about Governor Cuomo, we're building him four hospitals, we're building him four medical centers, we're working very, very hard for the people of New York, we're working along with him, and then I watch him on the show complaining, and he had 16,000 ventilators that he could have had at a great price, and he didn't buy them.
Oh, Matt, let's talk about the role of state government versus federal government.
Yeah, well, I think that points out two things. I think the media is using this for its own purposes and giving out misinformation. Just for example, Time put out a story with the headline that somebody took medication recommended by Trump and he died. Well, no, that person took cleaning material for aquarium without being sick, and they died. Not the malaria drug that President Trump has been talking about. And then, on the other hand, politicians, some of them are using this for political purposes. Cuomo is an example of that. He is actually advocating, you know, he's doing this kind of rhetoric against President Trump. It's not true. And then he's also advocating, along with Ilhan Omar, that there's a federalization of hospitals and private industry to force them to market certain things, make certain things. But here's the difference between the federal and the state. The federal is not forcing the states to do anything under what President Trump and the administration is doing. They declared a national emergency, national state of emergency. What does that do? It opens up the opportunity for them to expedite certain kinds of things, research and development and testing of drugs and also emergency funding. And then, of course, Congress is working on passing additional funding.
And they open their stockpiles as well?
They open their stockpiles as well. So they're providing as much as they can to the states. They created the task force and so forth. So that frees up the federal government to be able to help the states. The restrictions are not coming from the federal government. The restrictions are coming from the states. That's where the state and local police power is, and it's there that the states are actually declaring these executive orders that literally set them up as a potentate and a dictator, and they think they can operate without any constitutional restrictions. And that's what we're seeing happening on the state levels, closing borders, all the other things that we've talked about, plus many other egregious examples, including counties and cities, are also getting to this act because they see, for example, what's happening and that they can just issue this executive order and act like they have complete power.
Yeah.
So that's where the problem on the overreach is coming, not from the federal government, but from the state and local governments.
Our telephone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 1-800-733-9829. Matt Staver is with us today. And by the way, if you'd like to obtain a hard copy, if you don't have access to the internet, and certainly we'd recommend you just download it. It's 2 pages, Know Your Rights in the National Emergency at lc.org. LC, that stands for Liberty Council, lc.org. Or if you don't have that access, you may call Liberty Council to say, I want that emergency paper, you know, are my rights in the emergency. Call 407-875-1776. 407-875-1776. Our lines have packed out immediately here. We're going to ask that your questions be quick, to the point, that your comments be brief so we can have as many participate as possible. Again, you can write down the number. When you hear it open, somebody else, it'll free up for you, 800-733-9829. New Berlin, Wisconsin. David, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a question. First of all, thank you for your program. And second of all, I have a situation that arose yesterday after the stay-at-home order in Wisconsin. We were on private property in the gazebo. We had some young people playing the guitar and singing gospel songs, and I thought this would be good for the people. Well, about a half hour after we began, the police came and they said, you have to break up. You can't be out here. There were 10 of us. And I said, well, what's the rule? And he said, well, up to 5, and they have to be family members, and you have to be
up
6 feet apart.
Wow. Only 5?
Yeah.
And you have to be family members?
That's correct. That's what he said.
You know, that just goes way beyond any kind of reality and constitutional ability of that kind of enforcement. We saw something similar in Virginia. There were some young people playing in a sand volleyball, outdoor volleyball. They weren't doing high fives. They were keeping their distance. They're just playing. The police came and dispersed them because of that. They had just a couple more than 10. They were very respectful. They came with the loudspeakers and surrounded them, told them that they needed to vacate immediately because they were in violation of Governor Northam's executive order that limited gatherings to 10. The one that you're talking about is even more egregious. You're on your own property. They can't restrict you on your own property like that or limit it to just relatives or less 5 or less. I mean, that just goes beyond the bounds.
Well, what's he to do, Matt?
Well, you know, they can't, you know, the fact is, are they seriously going to enforce that? Maybe they will. I think if they do, you know, a lawsuit is necessary to address some of these things. Some of these things, I think, no doubt, will eventually be challenged in court. I think a lot of us are just hoping that this will go away really quick.
Mm-hmm.
But in a situation like that, telling you what you can do with, you know, just a handful of people, 5 people or so, under 10, whatever you had, outside, that is shocking.
Yeah, David, thanks for the call. We're going to hear some more from other individuals. Blanche in Bainbridge, Ohio, you're on the air.
Yes. We had a call in on King of Kings Radio last night, a 24-hour call in prayers for our country and our president, and everyone, we stayed open 24 hours, and we called in and we prayed for President Trump to not put his hand to anything that was against God.
Yeah.
And we prayed and believed. This is an attack from Satan himself, and Satan's workers are up there in that Congress. And what they're doing, I believe Trump, he'll have this economy opened in by the 15th of April, and he's going to open in the places where it's not really, you know, where there is hardly any cases. And the thing of it is, if you look at who's got the hot spots are New York and California, where all the baby killers kill them when they're alive, and all the homosexuals and all that.
I'm up against the break here, Blanche. Thank you for the call. We'll be right back.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. Neo-Marxists and our leadership at the local, state, and federal level are taking advantage of the coronavirus. By the way, there seems to be overwhelming evidence that China deliberately allowed this to spread around the world. They did not inform the World Health Organization for over a month after they knew what was going on. They allowed people to be infected and then travel to places throughout the world. Ironically, in 1999, two communist Chinese colonels wrote a document for the People's Liberation Army entitled Unrestricted Warfare that we have discussed for years. In that document, they call for using biological weapons on America and that they could get Americans to be afraid and surrender. They talked about the fact that Americans would be psychologically damaged. Americans now are psychologically damaging and destroying our own economy with socialist plans. The coronavirus is real. The solution to the communist Chinese coronavirus is not to collapse our own economy.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Again, folks, we don't have time for long speeches today. Just a quick question, a very brief comment. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Council. Losing liberty is the long-term crisis, our topic. And right back to the phone lines, Atlanta, Georgia. Leroy, you are on the air.
How you doing, Jim? I have three points of note.
Very quickly.
Two involving Italy and one Atlanta. Last week, it was reported that Italy was already using drones.
Yeah.
To make sure people stay in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on the east side of Atlanta in Stone Mountain, a friend of mine, he saw what looked to be UFOs, but turned out to be drones.
Drones.
Because 30 minutes later, they were on my side of town.
Mm.
Last thing about Italy. Another friend who works in the same industry as I do told me that military came into Viaphone 2 weeks ago in Italy and told everyone to leave. They are shutting down communications.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a very, very concern, and we're seeing some of these shocking things happening around the country. I'm glad people, Jim, are calling in and giving us some of the things that are happening in their communities.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you got a lot of people on the line, so let's just go back to
thank you, Leroy.
To them.
Let's go
thank
to
you.
Ed in Spencer, Tennessee. You're on the air, Ed.
Yes, hello there. Just like in Germany after World War One, do you think the $2 trillion stimulus package is the first step on the road to hyperinflation? Is this plausible?
Well, to get an idea of that $2 trillion, apparently our annual budget is $4 trillion. So it's a little over half or about half of our annual budget. And, of course, a budget of $4 trillion is just incomprehensible, frankly, that we have. I haven't double-checked those numbers on the annual budget, but that's what I have been informed. It is astounding. Like I said, if you were to print out a dollar from the founding of the country, 234-year-old America, it would take 275 of those end-to-end to be able to print $2 trillion. We can't pay that back. We're already in huge debt. It will ultimately bring down the country. So we've got to address the virus. We've got to protect our country. We can't bankrupt it, and we have to protect our freedom in the process. And obviously from the calls that are coming in, freedom is even under assault more around the country than probably many of us even realize.
Thank you, Ed. Let's go to Douglas in Waukegan, Illinois. You're on the air.
Yes, I was sitting here thinking, Trump really threw a big wrench into their globalist socialist movement. I'm wondering if we could throw another wrench into this movement by postponing our elections till 2021 or 2022.
Hmm.
Maybe that rumor got out
there.
Maybe
if you
all
did
of a sudden,
that, and you even suggested that, I'm sure this whole virus issue would just go away in a heartbeat.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, there are people who want to, be prepared when President Trump, he's moving toward wanting to get America back to work by Easter. Be prepared that there's going to be a lot of politicians and media just go after him viciously and blame everything on him when actually he's been acting an amazing way to be able to address this issue in a very timely fashion.
And believe me, the pushback is already taking place. Let's go to Trevor next in Wausau, Wisconsin. Trevor, you're on the air.
Hi, so two quick ones. So I thought there was a such thing as separation of church and state. I'm very disappointed that we have our church shut down right now. Why don't we band together? Can we sue the state? Second one is with this stimulus package, it's better that they don't do it, but if they do, I don't feel like I'm wrong for accepting the money and then using it to put it back in the economy if I'm going to be paying taxes on it anyway.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that are desperately needing it because of the extreme reaction that we've done, and I consider it extreme how we've just literally put America in large parts around the country out of work. And that has having a huge ripple effect. I think there's going to be people who ultimately have more depression, commit suicide, domestic abuse, child abuse, so many other things. Some businesses will never operate again. We have done an extreme reaction to be able to address this virus, which I don't think is necessary because there's greater threats we faced in the past. There's greater threats we'll face in the future, and we can't act like this all the time.
And what about the separation of church and state
issue? With regards to the church, that's a real serious issue. We're getting a lot of calls and talking to a lot of pastors, and we're looking at various cases and looking at the facts about these closures because I have a real problem with it constitutionally and otherwise.
Thank you for the call here, Trevor. We're going next to Pastor Jesus in Glendale, Arizona. You're on the air.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Very quickly.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I believe that this social isolation is also the same way what the Greeks did back in the day when they wanted to have a better society. They isolated people, and they came in on the Trojan horse. And what did they do? They conquered and divided. They divided and conquered.
No, they did. And you see what's happened is they, and if you look back at Egypt, this is this kind of same thing that happened that ultimately brought them into slavery. They ended up having a crisis, a famine. So they ended up buying Egypt's food. When they ran out of food, they gave them their livestock. When they ran out of livestock, they gave them themselves. And people began to beg for the government to help them. What has happened in the last few weeks is astonishing. And the precedent that we set, imagine if you have a socialist governor or president, would use a case like this or worse in the future to literally socialize, nationalize America. I am shocked that it has happened so quickly.
Yeah. Thank you for the call. One final call, Julie in Duluth, Minnesota. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'd like to know if you think that what's going on has anything to do with Chuck Schumer's threatening the Supreme Court. It certainly has taken the attention away from him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this is directly related to Chuck Schumer. I think it's much bigger than his threat. I think his threat was just unbelievable for him to do that because it looked like a physical threat against the justices.
Yeah, yeah.
So what he did was reprehensible. But I think it's much broader than that. I think it actually has a global component to it.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there's both media as well as politicians that are using some of this to their political advantage.
Julie, thanks for the call. We are out of time. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Counsel. Again, Know Your Rights in a National Emergency. It's a two-page legal brief that they have written. It's on their website, lc.org, lc.org. You'll find it in the rolling banner at the top of the page. Know Your Rights in a National Emergency. If you don't have access to the web, you can call Liberty Counsel at this number, 407-875-1776. That's 407-875-1776. These are turbulent times, folks. Let's keep our trust and hope in the Lord. Fear not. We find throughout Scripture, prayer is critically important for such a time as this. Matt, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Jim. Good to be with you.
And again, that's Matt Staver from Liberty Counsel. You can contact them, folks, 407-875-1776. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Take Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.